Welcome to the Millionaire Mindcast, where we broadcast weekly interviews with millionaire minds from across the globe to empower you on your journey of unlocking a rich and fulfilling life. It's time to unleash your millionaire within. Now, here's your host, Matty A.
Man, I'm excited to have my brother, Mr. Aaron Amuchastegui, in the house.
Dude, I'm so fun to chat too. I've been asking you, hey, I got to come down and hang out. So
yeah, you guys are got all kinds of crazy stuff going on. If you guys don't know Aaron Amuchastegui, he's one of my mastermind brothers. He's here locally in Sacramento. He's a juggernaut real estate investor. How many houses have you guys flipped over the years?
We're probably coming close to about 1,500 now.
Yeah. 1,500 houses all around the country, right?
Yeah, all around the country.
All around the country. You guys were, well, let's take them back. Before we get him up to speed on where you're at today, because you're working on some really, really big things, where did all this start?
Yeah, it did not start at 1,500 houses, right? Especially when people say that, they almost don't want to hear anything else. They're like, well, that doesn't relate to me. It's like, no, but really, it didn't start with that.
Yeah, because you would have never imagined in the beginning 1,500 houses,
right? Oh, yeah. Some of the deals that we just closed, like people are like, wow, that's an ultimate deal. I'm like, no, that was 10 years in the making of craziness. But yeah, how it all started, it's kind of funny. You know, I grew up doing construction real estate, right? So my dad was a custom home builder. I grew up working for him up in Southern Oregon. You know, his mom was a developer. I was always around this.
Oh, your grandma was a developer.
Yeah, she actually was like a subdivider, right? So my dad had moved to Klamath Falls because she was subdividing some land, and they were like, hey, we have this new high-end development. We're gonna make this. He's like, yeah, let's do this together as partners. But that was like early 80s in Southern Oregon. Uh-huh. And then they had like the spotted owl problem. And all of a sudden it's kind of like the crash we saw years later in California. It ended up being a bad deal. But getting to grow up with him doing that, mm-hmm. I always wanted to do like construction real estate. You know, I wanted to be able to buy a house, live in it, fix it while I lived there, move out and flip it later. And so originally when I first, like, you know, I grew up in a really small town. You know, in high school, I got really, really good grades, and it was kind of like, what am I going to do for college? And I'm like, well, when you get to a certain age, you're supposed to go to college. Oh, I'm going to go to University of Oregon. I'm going to study architecture. That has to, you know, that's like fits well to keep working for my dad.
Right.
Keep working with my dad.
Right.
It was, you know, it's kind of like, I wish I would have realized how much was out there in the world to actually challenge myself for like other schools or other things. Like, you could be whatever you want.
Yeah.
But they were like, what do you want to be? I'm like, I don't know. I should just do what my dad does. Mm-hmm. Why don't I do that? Went to school for a couple years at University of Oregon. But it was funny because for me, you know, coming from that small town, I mean, I graduated with like 17 kids I went to preschool with, right? So there were more people in my graduating class, but the 17 kids I went to preschool with, I also graduated next to them. So I didn't have to learn how to meet friends. I was like popular. It was easy. I had the same people there. And I got to a college town and I was like, wait, I don't really have social skills to meet people. Like, I don't know how this is going to work. And I was also like, and this is really fun to party, right? So we started like partying like crazy. Like, plenty of people go to college and do that. And that was my problem. I moved into a fraternity house. First year I got like all A's. Second year I wasn't going to class anymore. I was just partying, experimenting with all sorts of drugs. And ended up getting in just a ton of trouble. My second year in college, decided to not go back to school that beginning of the year. I went halfway and I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to, you know, start messing around and just hang out instead. I was doing like AutoCAD drafting and some other stuff. I'm like, I can do this like side job and make just what I was going to make when I graduate anyway. But yeah, I ended up getting just in a ton of trouble that completely reset everything after that.
Okay. So what are you willing to share about your story of getting into trouble? Cause I know you don't always talk about it, but I think, and maybe you don't want to share everything, but I think a lot of people go through some turbulence early on in their life, and it's that fork in the road moment. That's one of the things you and I connected on, right? Is we had that fork in the road moment, and we chose to go down a path that was not accepting our past as our future and making a choice to say, this isn't me.
Mm-hmm.
And going through a lot of shit to work our way out of what we really dug ourselves into. What was your mindset when you obviously you got in trouble?
Yeah.
What happened there?
Yeah, I mean, just as one of your prefaces, it's like we learn so much from mistakes. Like, there's nothing that will teach us like our mistakes will
right.
in life. And yeah, we'll share everything today, man. It used to be something that I was, that I was super ashamed of. Same. It used to be things that would come up that I would lose deals over. I mean, I remember a couple of people that were like, hey, they were signing up to do these investments with me. I'd done hundreds of houses. And then like, wait, was this you when they Googled? And they're like, oh, we can't do business with you. I'm like, really? Like after the track record doesn't matter. 15 years ago matters. All right.
To preface this, for the people that know Aaron, he's one of the most humble, nicest, kindest, most giving people in the world. So, and people say that sometimes about me where they're like, wait, you used to do those things? Like you were that messed up? And it's like, yeah. But now that is also what led me into working on the person that I've become today, right?
Yeah, that's like we had to go through that to realize like that was the wrong way.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's show sponsor.
And I admire, you know, there's people out there that can like do the normal thing, go to school, go to college, go get this other thing, reach success and reach, you know, faith and everything else without going through the crazy. And it's not my story.
Yeah.
I had to go through the crazy. I had to try things I wasn't supposed to. So I'm 20 years old. We're partying all the time. We're in a small town in Oregon. Like guys having guns and things like that was no big deal where we grew up. It was one of those places where the rifle in the back of the truck as kids were at school was totally normal. But we were like doing more and more drugs. We started, you know, it's like selling weed to each other and it becomes part of that kind of lifestyle. And I had this buddy that was a really close friend of mine. We were partying all the time, but he was like super close and he owed me like $400 or $500. And I kept just giving him a hard time about it one day. And I just kept going like, no, and for forever, it was like this long standing thing. And one day I just pushed him too hard and he just goes, here, you know what? I know how to get your money. We're going to go get it right now. I'm done talking about this. He goes, we're going to go down to the bank. You're going to drive me down to the bank. I'm going to walk in. I got a plan on how I'm going to rob that thing and I'm going to get your money and we're going to go do this. And I'm like, all right. And so the funny thing was I'd been partying a little bit, right? So we're not all the way there. We also, I thought he was bluffing. I think he thought I was bluffing. We were kind of calling each other's bluff at that point. So I'm like, yeah, let's go. So I'm going to the car expecting he's going to chicken out. I think he's kind of hoping I'm going to chicken out. And like neither of us really wanted. So long story short, we get in the car, we go down there. I pull up the side of the bank. He puts on a mask. He goes in, robs the bank, runs across the street. I pick him up. The crazy, weird adrenaline rush of uncomfortableness. But again, both of us thought we were bluffing, both of us, but neither of us wanted to be the one to chicken out. And we get back to his house right afterward. And he's counting up, we're like $1,400. I had more money in a bank account in that bank than he walked out with when we did that. And we were like, and all of a sudden we were kind of, so first you're like,
what did we just do?
Dude, right? You're like, whoa, what was that for? Like what, like why would you do something like that? But it wasn't even about that. It was just kind of like how silly now, especially the, like we'll lose that on a deal for like buyer repairs.
Right.
On something as that.
Right.
My dad called me a little bit later and he goes, hey, Aaron, I need to talk to you. The police called. They saw your car in this area for this thing that happened earlier today. And they just want to talk to you. But I know it's fine. I know it wasn't you. And I was like, oh, my gosh. And then he goes, or was it? You know, and so he took me down to the police station. And at first I'm like, yeah, I got nothing to do with this. And then they're like, hey, you're going to get in a lot of trouble. You need to tell us what happened. Like, this isn't playtime anymore. This isn't selling weed to some buddies.
Right.
And so... long story short, I think I say that a lot. It's a long story. It's just a long story. Let's just be real. So I go down there and they say, hey, if you tell us what happened, you admit to everything, we're not going to send you to prison. We're going to give you like these things. You guys will do house arrest. You guys will maybe have to check in on the weekends or something. They really did the scared thing. I'm a 20-year-old kid that obviously wasn't as big and tough as I thought I was. And so I say, okay, we did it. This is what we did. You know, they have me sign the confession. We do a few days of like video confessions. And I'm thinking, all right, like I'm going to get out of trouble. It's going
to
be my
move on.
Yeah, time to move on. It's going to be my reset. The part of that was that they were like, hey, you're going to have to go to drug rehab for 30 days. I'm at drug rehab thinking that it's kind of behind us, like behind us in one sense where it's like, it wasn't going to be that big of a deal. Now, mind you, it's fine the way it all turned out, and it probably should have been that big of a deal. But I had been in treatment for a week, and then the marshals came and served a warrant on me and said, hey, you now have a federal warrant. I'm thinking, we'd made a deal. None of this was supposed to happen. Like, wait a second. And we get there, and the feds had taken over the case. They had said, hey, you weren't supposed to get a deal like that. You shouldn't have gotten a deal like that. You got it because it was a small town, because you know because people knew your family. We are going to take that back over. So now I'm getting arraigned in federal court. but they still got my confession. They still had all the info. So they're like, we don't have to honor the deal that got you that confession. So now we have it. And so the options were like, fight this when I've already admitted to everything or not. And so I pled guilty. So, you know, on my, you know, it was, I had turned 21, you know, 4 or 5 months after I turned 21, I had to plead guilty. They sentenced me to a couple years in prison, which could have been way worse. I mean, I had a lot of things during that year as I waited to get sentenced. I had totally gotten clean, you know, didn't mess around, party. I haven't drank since, right? So I don't drink. I don't do anything like that anymore. There was a couple random people, like hundreds of people wrote letters on my behalf. One of them was the president of the bank, said, hey, give Aaron leniency on this. He's really turned his life around. It was a fluke moment. There was a guy on the side of the road one night at like 11 o'clock at night that was trying to flag people down. Nobody was stopping for him. I stopped for him. He's a veteran having a heart attack. Right, take him up to the hospital. So one of his letter to the judge was like, hey, Aaron saved my life last month, right? Nobody else would stop. Like,
gosh.
So I get two years instead of longer. And then this small, scrawny white kid from Southern Oregon that had never been anywhere got transferred to a federal prison in Southern California, which was just crazy. And the things, you know, being a minority for the first time in my life and really like all this stuff. But that is where I grew up. It's where I became a man. That's where I got to see like, wow, I wasted so much of my life when I'm here. And now is the prime age of my life, right? I'm healthy, I'm young. That's when everybody else is having so much fun and I'm spending it in prison, which I was like voted like most likely to succeed. And instead, this is my story. So it helped recreate this drive in me to be like, wow, you haven't been applying yourself. Like you're losing 2 years of your most productive time. Like you got to get out there and you got to go after it and really like take advantage and make your life better now.
And you literally use that adversity to your advantage. That almost kind of became, was it this, once you got out, this chip on your shoulder of going like, no way is that going to be my story? Or was it more kind of feeling sorry for yourself? Because I see a lot of people, it's one or the other, right? There's no really like tiptoeing the line, one sider. It's, you're either all in on poor me and here's all my woes, and that's the victim mentality that most people play out for the rest of their life. Or it was, hell no.
Like, yeah,
I'm going to write a new chapter.
Hell no. This is my drive, man. This is why it can't be me anymore, because I already gave up 2 years of my life. I'm running out of time, right? It's like I had to make up for lost time. I had to go try things. And it was kind of like this funny inside joke to myself, because there was almost like some people I would want to tell. But there was a worry of the, especially when it was that fresh, there was the worry of getting looked at different. So, I mean, I still remember all these moments of telling some people for the first time, like the people that gave me my job out of college and having to tell them for the first time after a couple internships. You're like, am I going to lose this or not?
Yeah.
So that became my, hey, this is why I'm going to succeed. You know, I can't bother wasting any more time.
Yeah. I remember feeling like a lot of shame and guilt, and whether it's, you know, you going to jail or saying something to somebody that you care about or doing something that's out of integrity or character. You know, there's a lot of shame and guilt that people carry, right? But at the end of the day, I think as you respond the way you know you should respond, that's also something that kind of connects us. Like it was something connected you and I. It's something that I can relate to seeing other people going, you know what, I'm not going to judge that person for that mistake. How they respond to that is really what's going to tell me about their character and whether or not they've earned my respect.
Oh, yeah. We make mistakes, man. Like people will make those mistakes. Yeah. And exactly what you said, it's the best thing, that people should be judged on what they do after the mistake, not the mistake. We all make different levels of them, right? It's really easy for us to go, wow, I can't believe you did that, but I did this. I can't believe you did that. It's all relative, you know, the stuff that we do. And it's natural to have a certain level of shame and disappointment, but really being able to have that be, so I'm not going to do it again. Like, I think the reason God put those feelings in our brain is so we won't do them again.
Right.
You're supposed to remember like the pain of that, to go like, hey, and some people you can say, hey, you get a ticket for speeding, they don't speed again. And some people need to get a huge slap to be able to realize, oh, I shouldn't do that again, that hurt.
Yeah.
People's pain levels are different.
So you got through that turbulent time in your life, and where did that take you next in your career?
Yeah. And there's so many stops that kind of made it funny. So now I'm in prison. I'm like going back to college. I'm like, you know, teaching GED classes there, like, being able to figure out where it fits for me as this guy that's like growing up, figuring out who he is. And for some of the first time having his own responsibilities, I'm going to college. I go, hey, when I get out of here, I want to finish college. And where do I want to go? And I'm like, well, I was doing some architecture stuff, and it was still like, the easiest fit was I'm still going to go run my dad's business. So I started researching, construction management. It's a combination of architecture and engineering and business. All right, that's what I need. And I looked around and said, oh, and I'm looking at this book. Oh, what are the colleges that do that? So Cal Poly San Luis Obispo is one of them. And I go back and I tell my cellmate, hey, this is where I think I want to go. Right. And a lot of times when you're there, people have a lot of big dreams.
Yep.
Right. And it's like, yeah, it's going to go nowhere, but they're fake. And he goes, oh, my grandma works in admissions there. You wouldn't believe this. My grandma she's worked at admissions at that college for the last 30 years. Like, so, I'm going to tell her. And so I start doing my things a year later, as that's going to be one of my kind of fun plans. It's like God putting the pieces together. I'm telling my parents, hey, this is what I want. And it's not just a pipe dream. This is what I want. And so they get it set up for the day they pick me up out of prison. She had scheduled an appointment with me at the admissions group over at Cal Poly, which was really hard to get into, especially mm-hmm. the construction management program that got into. I went and did an interview that day. It was like, changed my clothes on my way up to Oregon, went up to Oregon to then apply for Cal Poly, started going back to, back to like college, local college up there, got approved to go to Cal Poly for the construction management program the following January. Only 3 out-of-state residents had gotten approved for it. I was one of them. Luckily, when I was in trouble, my grades were good, right? I had nothing better to do. So went and got to study construction management at Cal Poly. Amazing program. I won this national championship 2 years in a row that had never been won by anybody for 2 years in a row in home building. I graduated in 2005 at the height of the home building boom. So being like class rank number one again at the best time in the world. So I'm getting recruited like crazy. I graduated. I got to be this project manager at a home builder, fresh out of college. And so it was funny though. It gave me this unrealistic expectation now, because then all of a sudden I'm making 6 figures a year, where just a couple years later. And part of why I was the best student is I was also a couple years older than everybody else, and I'd lost a couple years, so I was just going to be better than the other students. But we were golfing a couple days a week while we're making that 6 figures, because all we had to do was build the houses, and they were selling themselves. Mm-hmm. High to the housing boom, so easy. A couple years later, housing market starts to crash, and we're like, wait a second, this is hard. Now we had to lay off 75 people. Of the people that we started with, there were like 70 or 80 employees. The people that were left was like the 3 owners and me and a couple other. So all 5 or 6 of us were left up and, moved up to Sacramento. That's mm-hmm. how I came up to here. I was working down in San Luis Obispo at the time out of school, and we were trying to figure out what to do. And we went from getting paid a lot of money to build these houses to we were doing manual labor, and I'm going to job sites and hammering in stuff, and we're doing workouts with the bank. This is 2007, 2008. All the foreclosures are happening. We had hundreds of houses that were built out that there was heavy debts on, and we're like, how are we going to finish this? Kept trying to start new business plans. 2009, we were trying to buy foreclosures from, MLS agents. They were listed on MLS. And we were like, we're going to flip houses. People are buying these foreclosures, fixing them and selling. We want to get into that. And every offer we made, nobody would reply to us. It was like we didn't have the inside track. We didn't know anybody. And you know a lot about that, right? Yeah. Like the guys that had those lists. So we kept trying, and we'd write cash offers the moment they would come out on MLS, and nobody would reply to us. They wouldn't even reply, and we got your offer. Somebody else would get it, sometimes for less than we offered. And we're like, this is messed up. And what we found out later was like the people were giving it to their friends. They were giving it to their system. They knew exactly who was going to buy that because of the opportunity. So we were like, well, how can we find an opportunity? One of the partners in the company had seen at the time, it was like Realty Track, said, hey, this house is scheduled for foreclosure. He goes, oh, I own a property next door to there. If it actually really sells for that, that would be great. And we're like, I wonder how this works. So we started going down to where did this work? We go to the courthouse steps, try to see courthouse step foreclosures. No one's teaching a class on it. There's nothing to read on how to do this. There's only 2 or 3 guys down there at the time. They're not telling us anything. So we're trying to figure out what's happening. They gave me this piece of paper. I went and just started reading loan documents. Like, let me go see what I can figure out at the recorder's office. Just started researching. How's this process going to work? How are we going to be able to do it? After like a few days of trying, we're like, all right, I think we can know how this is going to work. Let's try to buy this house. That's about all the money we had left in the business. It was like a couple hundred grand, So they're like, let's go try this. We go to the first auction, and the opening bid comes out like $135,000. This is right down the street from here. A guy in a trash can pulls his laptop, puts it on top of the trash can. He shows up in a skateboard, says the address, $134,000. We go, and he goes, do you want to bid? Yeah. He goes, a penny over? Yeah. And the 3 other bidders there, we say, yeah, we're bidding. And he goes, going once, going twice, sold. We hand him the checks. He says, sold. And the other guys go, like they let out this gasp. So like the guys that you're bidding against, you expect them to bid against you. They don't. They do this gasp like, oh my God, you just lost all your money. We've never done this before. We're so freaked out. He signs over the receipt to us, right? And so now we're like super nervous. Like, what's wrong? We're asking them, what's wrong with this house? The guys are like laughing at us. He signed it. We go, why isn't the property address written on there? He goes, well, no, you didn't buy that property address. You bought like a loan. We're not specifying which address it is. You have to wait for your deed to arrive. And we were like, oh my God, what did we do? We just signed over like our life savings to this guy who showed up on a skateboard in shorts, has laptop on a trash can. And he gave us this yellow piece of paper that says this.
Oh my gosh.
We fast track a little bit. The house turned out. A couple weeks later, we get the deed. We fix it. We sell it. We make a big profit on it. And we're like, wow, that was easy. I can't believe we've finally been successful for the first time in years again. I think we've got an opportunity. Next 3 weeks, we went to auction every day. And none of our houses even came up for auction. We hadn't figured out the system yet. It was like we got super lucky that the first one we actually looked at actually came out with a bid and we bought it, or right. We would have never been in this business, but God had a better plan for me with that. So then we started to figure out the system. This actually takes a lot of work. You got to track it down. We started getting better and better at flipping houses, buying them on the courthouse steps. My dad had done an investment with us, did really good, kind of sent it to his buddies and said like, hey, look at what my son did. And they sent it to, and he forwarded it around. I got a call from one of my partners now, and he said, hey, my name's JJ. I trade stock. I manage stock funds for these guys up in Tahoe, and we'd like to talk to you more about what you're doing. Right around the same time, my daughter Charlotte was born 6 weeks early, right? My wife was working nights at the casino at Thunder Valley as a waitress. So I would come home at like 5 or 6. You know, we'd cut our pay in half. We're working hard, still trying to find out this new business. She's working nights at the casino. Her water breaks way earlier than it was supposed to. And we're having this baby, and I'm staring at my little baby Charlotte in an incubator. And I'm like, wow, this is my fault. This is my fault. My wife is having to work as a waitress at night when she's 9 months pregnant or 8 months pregnant because I couldn't provide enough. And I'm working around the clock and I'm not making enough money. I need to make a big bet right now. And it was that moment looking at Charlotte that then I told my guys like, hey, you know, we got out of the bad stuff. I think you guys are gonna have a good opportunity now. I'm gonna go do my own thing now. With my dad as my first investor, and then with JJ as those next investors. And it was really crazy the first time I went and met the guys in Tahoe, because by then I had flipped 4 or 5 houses with my dad, mm-hmm. and 4 or 5 with the other group, right? And they're like, so how does this work? But again, remember, a lot of people buy houses on the courthouse steps now, but back at this time, nobody did.
Right.
There was 3 other, it was a new business. So they're like, well, how does it work? Well, what do you do when you're bidding? Well, what do you do if it's occupied? Well, what do you do if they say this? And they were just drilling me with questions. And I'm like, well, I had the answers I had. And sometimes I'm like, I don't really know. I think we'd figure it out. But this is how we mitigate risk the best we can. And one of the guys looks over another after like this hour or two, somewhere in the middle of that, I'm like, this is my moment. This is like my big moment. And one guy goes, I'm in for $1 million. Another guy goes, I'm in for $1 million. And they start like, so we look around and I go like, wow. So at the end of that, there was like $5 or $6 million worth of guys that said, let's build a fund. Let's do this. I'm like, well, I need to talk to my wife first. Because part of starting my own business was because I was working too much and we were struggling. Like, we got to see if we can do this. And she said, you know, this is a very limited time thing. Mm-hmm. This is only going to last a year or two. Go work as hard as you can because we're not going to have it forever, and to see how it'll work. And at that time, then we had to have the talk like, oh, but you're a felon. Right. And I'm like, yep, I'm a felon. Armed bank robbery is the charge that I got stuck with, even though I drove a car. And I thought that was going to shut that door. And they were like, you know what? We've been through some stuff ourselves. We're not going to judge you on that. You know what? We think we can do this. And we started taking the skills that we had as a home builder and applying it to flipping on the courthouse steps. Now, the other 3 guys that were there grew to 5, grew to 7. But they were very based on, I'm going to buy a house. I'm going to fix it. I'm going to sell it. I need this much profit on it. As a home builder, we would buy land. We would see how much it's going to be worth later. We'd have these construction systems. We'd have these sales and marketing teams. We'd have these customer service teams. And we did an annualized revenue instead. And I said, you know what? I think I can do the same thing with foreclosures. So with this, we had our own construction team, our own sales and marketing team, our own customer service teams. We would flip a house, sell it to somebody, and they could call us 6 months later and we'd go fix something, right? We were like, hey, we're going to treat this like a home builder. And so we were able to quickly scale and use like almost like institutional money in this new business. And we had created the business around here and from 2009 to 2013, you know, around Northern California. That's when we flipped 1,000 houses.
Crazy.
Our investors did really, really good. You know, my wife was our broker. It was a really amazing time. And
So you guys saw that opportunity. You guys were making a lot of money. Obviously you executed on a plan, right? You saw a space in the market to fill a need to capitalize, and you guys were making a lot of money during that time.
Really a lot more than we were ready for. We didn't have
Tell me more about that.
Yeah, we didn't have a mastermind at the time. We didn't have friends that had done that before. Like, I remember before when Charlotte was in the incubator, I'm praying like, God, please help me come up with a system so we're not just broke, right? And then later you start getting super successful and you start going, oh, we had $100,000 in commissions this month. Oh, we had this going on. We had a giant office right down the street from here. A lot of employees, company cars, company things. And you start making more and more money, and without actually having like people to teach us, without having a mentor that could say, hey, Aaron, you should do this, this, and this. We were like new money, these small, we were both kids from a small town. And so all of a sudden we started spending our money on stupid things. We were being wasteful. We were giving it away, but giving it away in the wrong way because we wanted to, you know, be cool. You know, we wanted people to think we were cool. It was, and then Colleen and I almost started competing, right? So the
with each other,
right? So instead of us raising our kids, we had nannies raising our kids. And, you know, if I questioned her on anything she was buying or spending, she'd be like, hey, it was my brokerage that did it. Like I earned this money. And I'd be like, no, I'm the one that earned it because I bought the house. Like, that is not a good place to be with your spouse.
Right.
Right. But that is one of the things that happens with success, with money, without having, without knowing what you're getting into. So 2012, 2013, we're not doing really well in our marriage. We had a ton of money, right? It was crazy, way more than we were ready for. We didn't invest it any good way. 2013, a lot of these big investment funds started to realize there's an opportunity on the courthouse steps. And they start, and some of them came and met with us and they said, hey, you know, would you come work for us? We'll buy out your company. You'll come work for us as an employee. You do it instead. One of my great friends got the gig instead. But at the time I remember thinking, they told me, we're going to put you out of business. I'm like, you're not going to put me out of business. Like we made 40 grand last week alone on just the commissions. We didn't even need to make a profit. Like it was fine. And no, they put us out of business. They came and they started buying all the houses for way more than we could. We had no idea what their plan was. It was an amazing plan. They came and bought everything on the courthouse steps. Everything was listed on MLS. And within 6 months, the home values rose like 40% out here. So, but by them buying all the houses, I had a lot of employees, company cars, heavy overhead. And if you go 6 months without buying a house, I started that year with like $1 million in the bank. End of 2013, Colleen and I just bought a house, the first one for us to actually live in. And I remember saying, I need you to transfer me over some more money. And she's like, I don't have any money. I'm like, what? You don't have any money in your account? No, I don't have any money in my account. I didn't even run payroll. And we look at it, we're like, oh my gosh, end of the year, we're not watching our cash flow enough. We're out of money. So started the year with $1 million, ended the year a few $100,000 in debt. And Colleen and I are button heads. And I'm realizing, oh, I have to close the door and I have to lay everybody off and say, you know, we're sorry. You know, we got put out of business. I wasn't watching stuff fast enough. You know, I should have laid them off sooner, but I kept trying to push it. And so beginning of 2014, now we're broke. We had gone from like this crazy thing of had massive success and we're like, we blew it. We didn't even put our family first. Colleen and I, like, we barely stayed married. So 2014 was a lot of battles of us like finding God and going, wow, like what we should have learned. And it was a lot of prayer and re-looking at, you know, now we want to be this parents instead. We want to put family first in our lives. We want to help each other. We want to try to figure out what's really important. And remember, we prayed so much that, God, if we ever get a second chance, we're going to do it so much better next time. But all we could do that year was like keep putting one foot in front of the other and hope.
Yeah. So many people, when they hit that rock bottom, it's easy to stay there.
Yeah.
It's really hard to stand back up. But you guys, obviously, being in a rough spot and in a rough place, which I know a lot of people can relate to, what was your mindset at that point in time?
Yeah. It was really weird at first. Because, you know, mind you, I had already hit bottom and raised up.
Right.
So I had more shame this time. Like, wait a second.
I should have known better.
You got your second chance on life. Right. Like, you were given a second chance. Why would you be on the verge of divorce right now? Why would you have made all these decisions that put your family in turmoil? Why would you guys be broke now? Like, why didn't you learn? Why weren't you smarter? And so there was a lot more shame because it was like my second chance. Right. And so the mindset at first was like, you know, very lonely. And it was, you know, having to like finding church and like prayer and meditation was a huge part of just putting one foot in front of the other and trying to redo the mindset.
So it sounds like your environment was a big key.
Yep. Yeah. Environment was a big key in being able to just kind of stay focused. And then there is that moment where you have a certain amount of time for like being depressed and being ashamed. I don't remember how long it was. But, you know, probably a few month period where it was like a drag. And then I remember one morning at like 3 a.m. near the end of the year. And I just kind of woke up and said, you got to do something. Like, you got to do it. You can't just sleep and be lazy. You got to start trying. And I started, you know, looking at social media, looking at other stuff. I had read The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss. I read The Miracle Morning by our good friend Hal Elrod. Yeah. That was how, you know, I got introduced to so many of us and started saying, all right, so what can I do to make this work out? And I started to combine those two things. I do The Miracle Morning, start getting up early. That helped me fix my brain and my mindset. Now I'm meditating, now I'm praying, now I'm journaling. I'm trying to unpack what I need to do. And then the 4-hour work week style was, you know, so I'd get up at like 3 or 4, run through that. Between 5 and 7, I would run the office side of my business, 4-hour work week style, super proactive, you know, sending the emails, super productive, doing that. And then at 7, I'd go drop my kids off at school. And then I would go do manual labor again on my own job sites. Right. And because I still had some deals, and instead of paying a contractor $500 for the request for repair, I'm like, I'll just go do it. I'm just going to go do that request for repair and I'm going to get the $500 instead. The, you know, near the end of 2014, I remember applying to be an Uber driver, applying to be a building permit inspector in the city of Napa. And I was still like doing some auctions off and on, but they were like happening every few months, like with one investor left. And just trying to figure out, and I was like, we just have to do everything. But those things helped me with the mindset of going, hey, I will be able to rebuild and do this. And then my dad passed away, which was a crazy like reset also. So it was like, just as we were trying to, you know, still have that happen, he died way before he was supposed to. He was my first business partner, my mentor. He was my stopping, you know, thing that if I totally went broke, he was going to be able to help me. Also didn't have that. And then I had a lot of, but we learned the lessons. We learned the lessons of faith. We learned the lessons of if we did it different, family was now first. There's a whole part of like our lifestyle now that was from that. But I got this new second chance, you know, and it was a total fluke deal. I had bought an apartment complex out in Texas back in like 2011 when everything was good. I still owned it at the time. It was making a little bit of money that helped us. It was making like $2,000 a month. Mm-hmm. It's great. I should have done more of that stuff when I had the money, but I bought that one by accident. Right, that was just grace that for the reason I had it, and an agent that helped me buy that sent me this thing, said, hey, there's a new apartment down the street that's for sale. Do you want to buy it? When I was looking at the title report, it said notice of default on it, and I thought, this is crazy. I've got all the tax rolls for this apartment complex, but it's scheduled for foreclosure next month. I should go check this out. And Kalina's like, you know what? Go for it. Like, go check it out. I had the $300,000 line of credit, that I hadn't been using. That was really that it was my dad's that was kind of passed down to me by the bank because I think they felt bad for us. And they said, okay, if you can use it, you can try. I flew out and I went to this auction in Texas, and the auctioneer comes out to sell the apartment complex. I had $300,000 and the opening bid was $300,000. And I was like, this is meant to be. And she says, going once, going twice. And I got cold feet and I wouldn't bid. I had lost my confidence. I was like, oh my God, because I hadn't been successful in like a year now.
Right.
Right. And so I was afraid to pull the trigger. And so then I'm like kicking myself like, dude, you flew all the way out here for that. It was the perfect amount. What happened? But while I'm sitting there trying to look at that, I look over and there's another auctioneer and he's selling house after house after house and nobody's there and nobody's bidding on it. And I'm the only one standing at that auction. And I was like, this is like 2009 in California. This is my big second chance. This is getting to start over of that opportunity I felt like I blew back then of, wow, it'll never happen again. I was like, this might be our chance. So then I went home. So I called Kalina and I'm like, hey, so bad news is this, but good news is I think there's a good opportunity out here. The next month I fly out there a couple days before auction. I spend a couple days driving all the house, driving 40, 50 houses a day, going through and doing all the title reviews, you know, doing the comps to try to figure it out. I go to auction the next day and I buy two houses. I buy two houses for super cheap, way less than I was planning to do it. I go and I buy a drill at Home Depot. I go drill out the locks. I go, you know, put a lockbox on it. I start calling trades. I spend a couple days to actually do that. And that became the first of our flips in Texas. And so I bought those first couple and I thought, wow, there's a whole new opportunity out here. And then that was in 2015. And kind of since then, how we went from like that 1,000 and why we have rentals now, a couple of the big things I learned was like track your cash flow. Couple of big things I learned was of those 1,000 houses we bought, if I would have just figured out a way to keep 50 of them, I would have never had to work again. Like, it was kind of ridiculous that I'd made so much money and then went broke again. And so one of the things was like, hey, if we ever do it again, one, we're going to live life big. We're going to keep our family first. Two, we're going to set ourselves up in a way that if things go bad again, we'll be set for life instead, because that should have happened. We had the resources and instead we blew it. and then, you know, have experiences over things instead of buying those things that we couldn't pay our rent with before. The I remember I had these glasses that were like $2,000 sunglasses. And it's like, there's no reason for that to be a thing. But and then later when we were broke and I was trying to be an Uber driver, it's like, wow, I really wish I would have got that money back, you know, to buy groceries instead. So it was like, we were going to learn all these new things. And so I started flying out to Texas every month, fixing them. Out of every 10 we would buy, I'd only flip two or three. We turned 7 or 8 into rentals and just keep growing and keep growing and keep growing that. And it's really taken off.
Where are you guys at now?
Now we have somewhere, that's like 350 houses in Texas, somewhere between 350 and 400.
That are rentals that you guys
That are kept. Rentals. That are rentals that we kept with a series of, you know, investors that we would trade out for loans and things like that, to where we, you know, the first couple of years flipping houses, the investors got most of the money. We got like 35% annual returns, and we were still doing good, but they did the best.
Right.
Right. And this time it was getting to keep more of that. So now we have our rentals out there. It's been really, really fun to get to rebuild and change. You know, we give away 30% of our income now, you know, to our churches and our nonprofits. Because we told, that was one of the deals we kind of made. Like, if we ever do it again, I'm not going to waste money on that. I'm going to do it for the right thing. And also knowing that my faith and you know, the spiritual part of us is what really helped get it back. I felt like when God thought Aaron learned his lesson, that's when he showed me this new opportunity. And so one of the things we said is, hey, even if we go broke again, we're going to know that we didn't waste it on stupid sunglasses, mm-hmm. that we gave it to good causes.
Did it all for the right reason.
And now we do experiences over things. And we started, you know, pulled our kids out of school. We started homeschooling them for a lot of different reasons. But, you know, that first year we spent a week at home, 3 weeks on the road, just traveling the world. We were like, you know what, even if we go broke again, nobody can take away those memories, those experiences. We're going to spend it on the right stuff this time. So we started just traveling as a family, you know, doing a bunch of big things. And it's turned into a bunch of different businesses now too. I mean, I was just a real estate operator before, mm-hmm. and then I was a real estate investor. And now we've got some recurring revenue software companies. We've got, you know, some podcast stuff. We've got some online marketing stuff. We built software to make it all happen. And so as we're growing this time, there's a lot, you know, we've just done it with our family. We've done it for the right reasons at the right times. And it's really been, a blessing. We've been, now it's super lucky and it's super fun, man. Cause a big side of that too, is as soon as I went to a GoBundance event. Right. The GoBundance was my first mastermind. It was kind of like, hey, from Hal Elrod and it was actually from you. It was you and I were Facebook friends from like a deal we did back when I was actually doing good before I went broke. Right. And
that was when I was first getting started.
Yeah. I think it was some of your first wholesale deals.
Yeah.
We bought them and back when we had a bigger business. And so like later on Facebook, you're like, hey, I'm going to this mastermind thing. So the cool thing too about being successful this time is now I actually realize I had mentors. I had people to talk to that could guide me in that and go, hey, if you're doing this, why don't you do this too? And I'm like, well, that just saved me $20,000. Or why don't you do this too? And that challenged me to do other stuff. Or hey, why can't you be more well-rounded? Because there's so many things that's like, for my second chance, have just been way more put in place to help me succeed and instead of fail. And now I don't have to do it by myself. And the first time it felt like there was nobody I could talk to and say, this is who I am. There's nobody I could talk to and say, hey, I lost $1 million last year, but I just made $300,000 on this apartment deal. Like, you can't say that to the kids in line at your kids' preschool, the other parents in line at your kids' preschool.
No.
It's just not a conversation. So you just feel, so it's like a lonely world.
I heard so many things in there that I want to recap real quick, because I think a lot of people, I mean, to be able to swallow your pride and go from making $1 million a year to literally thinking about taking a job and going and swinging a hammer and putting a tool bag on.
Yeah.
I don't care who you are. If you can do that, which is really whatever is necessary to succeed, right? Because a lot of people will allow their ego to dictate what actions they do or don't take, which really can determine what levels of success and or failures they achieve. And you at least had the ability to do whatever it was necessary to get you guys back on the path, right? And you kind of have to know when it's that time to do that, right?
Yeah.
How did you assess that, right? It's like,
it's at different times the ideas kind of hit you, right? Because some of it's like, how am I gonna pay the rent?
Yeah.
Or how am I gonna pay the mortgage? And you're like, I don't know. I could maybe make money over here. Maybe. Oh, instead of paying that request for a pair there, I'll go do it, and I'll tell them I'm gonna do it. It's, you have to hunt to find that value. and then be willing to do everything. And the, you know, and you have to not, you know, not be doing it alone. Like, try to involve people in it. Try to find people that will support you through that and encourage you to really go through. Because one of the other parts of being an entrepreneur is you learn how to turn, you learn how to create stuff. You learn how to actually create stuff that could be very profitable. It could be, you know, very lucrative. And so it's like, once you learn to look at things like that, you can have lots of seasons in your life where there's up and downs. But it was kind of like, when I started hitting my stride, like probably a year after I went broke, I was able to kind of confidently tell a buddy of mine, like, I was catching him up and he's like, what, you don't have anything anymore? I'm like, no, but actually I'm not worried about it anymore because I know my next opportunity is going to hit. And I know that, it is going to, I'm going to keep going. And when I see, when the opportunity comes up, I'm going to be able to find it and I'm going to be able to see it and I'm going to be able to capitalize on it. Most people even wouldn't have flown out to Texas the first time, mm-hmm. or they wouldn't have started flying out every month to go do it the next time. So you got to be, so it's about seeing the opportunity and then knowing like, all right, the opportunity is there. I have to be willing to go capitalize on it right now. It wasn't like I'll go out in a couple months or maybe later, or let me talk about it, put something in line. I mean, the deal I did in Mississippi, I remember it, walking into the kitchen table, telling Kalina, I need to fly to Mississippi in the morning. Right now it's turned out to be this great deal that's going to set something else up. But if I wasn't willing to fly to Mississippi within 12 hours of finding out about it, I wouldn't have had it.
Speed, right? Opportunity doesn't wait for anybody. It shows up and it goes away very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And you guys, the other thing that I thought was really, really important to highlight is there's a difference between being rich and wealthy. And, you know, doctors make a lot of money. Dentists make a lot of money. I know we know a lot of people that make a lot of money, but they don't utilize that vertical income to go out and buy passive income streams, which really unlock generational wealth and freedom and passive income. And that was a big intention second time around for you guys.
It was the foundation the second time. Because the first time it was, we did really good, but it was for nothing. We didn't know what to do with it. And then it was wasted. But again, mistakes is what creates the best memory and the best action. Mm. Like if we hadn't gone so high and crashed so hard, I don't think it would have been the foundation next time of being like the, because it used to be like the, oh, I flipped 20 houses last month. I know I'm going to flip 20 houses a month no matter what.
Right.
I remember thinking like, oh, all I need to do is 2 or 3 a month and I'll never do less than 2 or 3. And then to now going like, hey, next week's not promised. Next month's not promised. I got to make sure that I set some things up now in case this business shuts off next month. In case somebody comes in and starts buying in all of my markets tomorrow instead, I got to make sure that I'm at least setting myself up where next month I still have a plan.
Masterminds have become, I know for you and I, a very critical part of our growth. And a lot of people still don't really understand masterminds. It's becoming more and more commonplace and people are having their events.
Yeah.
How have masterminds played a role in what you've accomplished over the last 3 to 5 years?
Yeah, I think... You know, for me, it's kind of that example of saying my friends were the other parents at my kids' school. And there was so much of my life that I couldn't tell them about. I couldn't tell them how I was struggling in my marriage. I couldn't tell them about how my wife should have left me, mm-hmm. right? And I'm just lucky that she didn't. I couldn't tell them about the big wins or the big losses. And there's so many masterminds out there now that will fit whoever you are, right? If you're a real estate agent, if you're just getting started, if you are an investor, if you're a tech investor, there are so many out there now that it's about finding one that fits you to where now you can show up to the conversation. I had remembered before not being able to say everything and having to like keep from actually speaking openly and honest because these people aren't going to understand.
Yeah, it's almost like playing small, right?
You'd play in small. And then you get to a mastermind, you know, with the right guys and you go, I can actually now speak totally openly and honestly. I can say, I made a bunch of money on this. I lost a bunch of money on this. And there's absolutely no judgment. And they go, oh, really? What did you learn? When you lost that $1 million, what did you learn? I want to learn from that. And you're like, really? And somebody goes, oh, I went through that same thing, but you know, I did this instead. And so it becomes this like open, honest sharing thing where now for the first time you get to feel really free and be open and honest. And then by doing that, you get to hear somebody else's, well, God forbid, you could learn from someone else's mistake instead of your own.
What you've shared to me, and I'm learning some more stuff about your journey today, and we're close friends.
Right.
You've taught me so much because we've had that space, right? I think, you know, people don't have a space or an outlet to really, you know, not have to apologize for all the great things that they're doing and also have a safe space and a place to be vulnerable in to work through the shit that we're struggling with, right?
Yeah. you know, it's like, it's not bragging anymore, right? It's just talking. Mm-hmm. It's just my story. And people are like, well, you know, before I'd be like, no, I can't tell them how good or how bad because it's either bragging or they're not going to feel, when you tell somebody I lost $1 million last year, they're not going to feel sorry for you, really. Yeah. They're going to be like, what? Like you had, you know? And so now it's like, no, it's not bragging. It's not hyping. This is just my story. And this is just your story. And let's just talk about it and be open and honest. And it does, it creates magical things. And, you know, and there's free mastermind. If nothing else, it's like, you know, I think people just need to find more people that are like them and go, hey, let's talk about our goals together.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what we want to do. Let's talk about what went right, what went wrong.
I want to highlight, though, something that, you know, you can't show up to a mastermind, and I see this a lot, right? Whether it's in a virtual mastermind online, whether it's somebody buying somebody's course, whether it's actually going to a paid event or whatever it may be, you get out of it what you put into it. And you are somebody that I think exemplifies this at the highest level of, you played full out with your investment in the mastermind and in yourself. And that showed. And for those that are listening right now, I really think it's important to understand that whether it's your relationship with your wife or husband, whether it's with your health and how you work out at the gym, whether it's in your business, you're going to get out of that what you put into it.
Oh, yeah.
And I know for you, you had some real intention behind that. I always have an intention when I go into a mastermind or when I go to a conference or an event of what outcome I desire. And then I work backwards of how do I need to show up to get the most out of that. Was that something that you had kind of planned with how you started showing up to masterminds and events and the relationships that you were building? Because you maximize those to the fullest.
Once I had seen the first one to Go Abundance was the first time I'd been to anything like that. And I remember first signing up for it and being like, this is expensive. Because I was doing okay. I was on my way back up, but it definitely was still like the cost of it was a thing. And then afterward, it was like, oh, I also pay for my hotel? That wasn't included in this? Yeah, right. I'm also paying for the
snow. This is expensive.
Right. And so it was looking at it like, this is a really expensive investment. And then you first get there. And I knew that I was like, I had heard about kind of like Tony Robbins and stuff like that. So I'm like, I'm probably gonna be a little uncomfortable. It's probably gonna be a little bit weird. I'm not really the guy that goes and does this, but I paid to be here. And, or again, that pain from before was encouraging me to like push through the awkwardness to mm-hmm. see. And so the first event I went to was totally magical because for the first time I was able to now talk openly and honestly. I was able to say, hey, I did this, something that I was ashamed about. They go, me too. And hey, I did this. And they go, oh yeah, that guy did the same thing. And you start to like build off and the good and the bad. And so it was a totally magical event. And the more that I put into it, you know, we would go do these like fun, energetic stuff. And it was the first time I'd been skiing in a long time. And so in doing all these different things, this well-rounded new thing. So I left there. And at first I was like, okay, that was cool, but I'm not going to sign up for membership. I went to that event. I can't afford to sign up for membership. It's not gonna be worth it. And I found myself a few weeks later starting to adopt some of the things people talked about. And it was really helping me encourage it. And then about a month later being like, I'm missing out. I need more. I want to have access to those guys. I want to be part of their Facebook page. I need to keep going with these conversations. And so I called up to sign up and said, hey, now I really want to sign up. And then I was like, wow, I'm going to pay for a mastermind. This is crazy. And then, but that really started that year where we got to this point where we said, you know, first Kalina was like, hey, I don't know if you're going to that, but then she saw me come back so changed. Yeah. And then our business starting to come back so changed. It was like, wow, I won, like that one event, you know, was like a 5X experience. What else should we do? We ended up, then kind of the first like Fanbundance event was coming up soon after that. And instead of like thinking these were long shots, it was like, how can we fit this in? Like, oh, I can't go to that. I have this IMN event in Florida that I'm speaking at for a single family rental conference. And then it was this random shot where I told Clea, I'm like, well, what would you think about maybe coming to Florida with me while I go to this event? And then we'll fly from there to Philadelphia while we go to this other event. And it's a mastermind, but it's for families. Like, and she was like, okay. So we flew out to Florida. While I'm at the event during the day, she's like taking the kids around Miami, like going and doing all this kind of homeschool fun stuff, learning about, you know, having these life experiences. But now we were having them together. We flew up to Philadelphia, went to that mastermind. My kids and my wife were nervous as we're going in because we don't know anybody. but they left the mastermind the same way. Like, wow, it was cool to be able to talk to people. It was cool to be able to talk to people that are living our life. Our best friends now, I mean, you and I live close to each other, but our best friends are all over the US because you start to find the people that are like you. So they were like, oh, they're like us.
Yeah.
Even though we don't have people like as much like us at home, there's people like that. We started going to the, you know, the front row events that year and BYEB, the best year ever event. And we started to go to mastermind after mastermind after mastermind as a family. And that was part of our like traveling and going. And every time it was a new twist on stuff because some are entrepreneur based, some are like spirituality based, some are family based. And so having that well-rounded one, I mean, right now I'm setting my goals for next year and I'm trying to figure out like, hey, I can't go to 50 of them. I probably can't even go to 20 of them, but what are like the 10 or 12 key ones I'm going to go to this year and trying to map that out and say like, this is good for business. This is good for spirituality. You know, Colleen and I go to a couples retreat. It's a Christian couples retreat that we go to and trying to find like what should be the plan for the year with that. But yeah, it was when I got to my first one and saw how that, again, that first GoBundance event that you invited me to, I hadn't been to anything like that before. And then once I saw the result, it was almost like got addicted. It was like, let's do this. Mm-hmm. Let's go see what's out there and see who's out there and just keep building off of it. And then the easier it is to show up, you know, full out. And really be ready to play and be ready to listen.
You know the ROI is there when you put it in.
Oh, yeah.
When you put in that effort.
Like you can go and when it starts to get uncomfortable or when there's a speaker you don't think you want to hear, you can go hang out in your hotel room.
Yeah.
In between events, you can go hang out in your hotel room. But you're not going to get as much out of it as if you actually sit through whatever and listen or hang out and walk up to somebody. I remember walking up to people going, hey, what's your name? Where are you from? Oh, yeah, I do that too. What do you do? And the more you do that, I mean, I found so many people are like, oh, really? You live in Austin? I do investments in Austin. And, you know, the next month I was out there meeting with them, going touring their stuff. They were touring mine. And I could have just as easily not said, hey, how are you? What's your name?
Right.
There were so many people that I went up and like introduced myself to and then realized like, oh, we have a lot in common. And, you know, let's investigate. Let's become friends. You know, all sorts of stuff.
You have so much stuff going on. How do you find time for the balance? I've always believed, hey, everybody's got their own definition of balance.
Mm-hmm.
And your definition of balance, I'm like, holy shit, there's no way I'd be able to keep up with that. But you are coaching your kids' sports teams. You and your wife are crazy intentional with how you show up and playful out for each other. Your businesses are insane. I mean, you got multiple 7-figure businesses that you're crushing it in. You're humble. How do you find that balance for you?
Yeah. Balance is seasonal for us. You know, my wife and I, we kind of, we check in with each other a lot. And that balance is seasonal. A lot of times at the beginning of the year. So right now, we're on what should next year look like. And then it also happens every few months. There's times when we're like, hey, for the next 4 or 5 weeks, this is what it's going to look like. And or for the next couple months, this is what it's going to look like. Like last year, you know, January, February, March, you know, so January through May last year, we were super busy. Colleen and I were training to do an Ironman together. So like every day we were totally in sync on that. So, you know, we went to Hawaii a couple times for that training. We went to other places. We went to some of the mastermind stuff. So we had this really kind of busy year, beginning of the year, leading up to Ironman. Ironman Hawaii, Kalina finished it. It was so amazing to see her be able to. Year prior, she was going to, but had to kind of get this emergency surgery. So it was like a put off forever type thing. And then this year we got to do it. So seeing her cross the finish line after how hard she worked for it was like so amazing. So we had worked hard through May. And that was kind of our mindset, business and travel and do that together. And then we had a few months that was like, okay, so then we had our Loomis house Airbnb'd for the next 3 months, right? So now July, you know, June, July, August, we've got that house Airbnb'd. What are we going to do? So it was like, we're going to go to a few of these masterminds. We're going to go on just a few other trips. We're going to go live in our house in Texas. July and August are not the good months to go take your family to Texas to stay with you for the first time because it is super, super, it was just the bad time to be like, no, we got out there, called our friends like, hey, we're in Austin. They're like, we're not. Like we don't hang out in Austin during July and August. Like you're going to melt outside. And then we said, but the next part of the season for us was then it was soccer season, flew back to California, had 3 months of soccer where I'm the coach. I didn't do any masterminds during that trip. I canceled my international trip I usually go on because I wanted to commit to being the soccer coach for those 3 months. So we knew that, you know, for those few months we were going to be back in California. And the, you know, and now as we hit the end of the year, now it's, you know, Thanksgiving, Christmas season. In January, you know, beginning of the year, we're gonna drive down to Texas. We're gonna be at our Texas house January through March. And so our balance kind of lives, I would say, if the reason I kind of went through last year is to think about that out loud to realize our balance right now is probably like 3 months at a time.
Yeah.
And I've heard people say every year they kind of renegotiate with themselves and go, hey, is this going to be my job this year? Is this going to be this? We're probably like in every 3 months. Like, we don't know what's going to happen in April. Are we going to stay down in Austin? We can come back up here. We just said, no, January through March, this is the commitment. I'm actually setting up a new office down there for one of my other businesses, kind of startup mode, hiring two or three new people for it. And I'm actually going to go to an office and work in an office as a CEO, working with a team when I haven't worked in an office for a long time.
It's exciting, man.
Yeah.
You guys got so many cool things, and I want to get Kalina on the show because his wife is unbelievable. We love their family. We love Kalina. And she's got an amazing book, The 5-Hour School Week.
Yeah.
And she's a powerhouse.
You got to get her on because she is so much more amazing than me. You know, there are so...
I'm going to second that.
Yeah.
I hope she listens to this right now.
There are so many reasons why, you know, she has helped do this. But, you know, as a good part of what we found in our balance and to give her credit and definitely we got to talk about her book for a second. But I first started, you know, doing business in Texas and I said, hey, you've got to get your broker's license out there now. Like, hey, I've got this new opportunity. I know you've been the stay-at-home mom for the last year. I know we've been homeschooling, but I need you to get your broker's license again because I can't give that commission to somebody else. And she's like, she looks at me and goes, and I'm like 10 or 20 grand a month. She goes, Aaron, are you kidding me? Are you crazy? Do you not remember what happened? Do you not remember like what happened with us? Like we barely survived this. We said we were going to learn from that. She goes, I'm never working for you again. She goes, what's going to happen? She goes, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to support you 100%. I'm going to be your biggest fan. When you need to fly out there, I'm going to handle the kids. I'm going to homeschool these kids so good. I'm going to run our family so you do not have to stress about running our family. And so you can go run your business, but I'm not going to be the broker. And I was like, we can't afford to do this. But what was the crazy part about that, when she said, hey, instead of us working and both of us having incomes, I'm going to run our family and our household, but I'm going to root for you. And my company grew like 4 or 5 times. So I was like, hey, we can't afford to lose that. But by us having that mindset where she made sure that the household and the family and everything was just great and they were able to support me through all of it, I was able to build the business so much faster and so much bigger than it ever was with her like working alongside right. me. Like she was a smart one. And she said, no, it's going to be smarter. So the us not working together, us not having those dual incomes, we ended up making more money, being happier as a family, way better relationship. We're now in the roles that we thrive and we love. But she had to make the ultimate sacrifice too, because when she was the big broker in California, people were like, oh my God, Kalina, you're so amazing. I want to take you to lunch. And now, you know, being a mom is like, it's not all exciting all the time. Sometimes right. it's a
thankless job a lot of Brax, the times.
Yeah, it's
right?
a thankless job.
And Brax, the most important one.
The most important.
For a family unit.
Brax is like, make me a sandwich right now. Right. They're not saying like, thank you. And so of course she would be tempted to like, it would have been way more fun for her to actually go back to work
yep.
and be this awesome, like the person that other people looked at. And she said, no, she should make the sacrifice. And it's been there, you know, as we were doing a lot of our trips and journeys, people kept texting her and going like, hey, what are you doing on Facebook? Like, hey, I saw these pictures. We weren't announcing that we were homeschooling. We weren't anything. People just saw it and they go, hey, what's your story? And I kept telling her, hey, you got to write it down. You got to write it down. Like people are asking you, you got to write a book. You got to write it down. And she was like, no, this is nobody's going to care. Nobody wants to hear our story. And I just kept encouraging her. And she was finally like, okay, because people just kept saying, what are you doing? I want to hear. I see your pictures. She then, we go through, we write the book. We release the book in November. I think 2 years after we had started homeschooling. And it gets released and we put it out there. And it takes off.
Yeah, it did.
It totally takes off. And it was just our story. It's an inspirational guide of what we did. And it talks about, hey, we had the wrong values. We didn't have a family first. It changed. We said, hey, we want to have a family first lifestyle. This was our way that we could take what Aaron learned in the business world of the 4-hour work week and apply it to our family and our life and really, you know, do that. And it was like number one bestseller in Amazon and education for like 12 weeks. You know, we had a lot of people start reaching out. She has people reach out to her now all the time. They're like, hey, can you help us? It has become this phenomenon. I mean, if you're on Instagram and you have any interest at all in homeschooling or partial homeschooling.
Education. Yeah. Kalina's your girl.
Yeah. You find Kalina. It's K-A-L-E-E-N-A. You find her on Instagram, Kalina Muchastegi, or the 5-Hour School Week. Every day she is pumping out so much content mm-hmm. with the only thing. The way I was finally able to talk her into writing the book. As I said, if you help one family not have to go through, because that was a different part of our pain. Like when our kids were going to school, we were going through this stuff and we said, hey, but you know, life kind of sucks right now. Like we're picking up our kids from school like this. We're picking up Maddie and we're dropping them off happy. We're picking them up miserable. They're stressed out. There's got to be a better way. And we're like, no, it's just the way it is. you just do it. Life sucks sometimes and you do it. And we finally realized like, no, maybe it doesn't have to suck. Maybe we don't have to do it the way people always did. So I said, if your book helps one person, then it was worth it. And now it's tens of thousands of people have reached out to me and been like, wow, you changed my life.
It's insane, man. And even if you're not into homeschooling, I think just in general, the way you guys parent your kids, there's so many threads and themes in that book that we've pulled out. We don't homeschool our kids. And right. Yet we parent differently, engage with our kids differently, and empower our kids differently based on a lot of the stuff that she taught in that book. So some really cool stuff. Guys, we'll include all of the links to everything we've talked about in the show notes and show description at MillionaireMindcast.com. But for people that want to follow what you guys are up to, what you're doing, all the cool stuff, how can they go ahead and do that?
Yeah, there's, you know, Instagram is fun. It's like our go-to right now. It's probably one of our best ways. Now I'm on all that stuff. If people have questions about anything, it's like, come find me on Instagram, send me a message, find me on Facebook, like add me as a friend. Let's chat about stuff on there. You know, if people want to get into like, you know, foreclosures in Texas and stuff like that, I've got other businesses and companies within that. I've got software about that, but you know, find me on Instagram. You can hear about all sorts of things like that. But and really just like to hear that we're, you know, it's like if one person says, wow, that was inspiring. Yeah. Like I love getting on podcasts, getting to talk with guys like you. It's just you and I chatting and learning about each other today.
Yeah.
But yeah, come find me.
It's amazing, man. Okay. So as we wrap up today, Aaron, something we haven't even had a chance to talk about is a productivity whiz. When we talk about the 4 hour, right? There's a couple themes in here, right? The 4 hour, the 5 hour. Yeah. So as you're running as many businesses as you're running, you got family, 4 kids, a beautiful wife. You guys are in between 2 different states. Just a few years ago, you guys were figuring out if you're going to be able to keep your house and if you were going work as a building inspector.
Yeah.
So anything is possible, and yet you've done it very intentionally. I don't want people to think this happened on accident. You've got a whole presentation on productivity.
Yeah.
Give us 3 productivity tips that our hard-charging entrepreneurs and wealth builders can take away and leave this episode with.
Yeah, I'm glad you said, I mean, half the reason I came down to hang out with you today, Matt, is after this, we're going to go over our next year's goals and try to like help become, you know, be productivity masters for each other with that. I think that a couple of productivity type tips. I mean, one is going to be a goal tip. I think every year somebody should do a keystone goal. Like at the beginning of the year, it's really easy for me to say, these are the 800 things I'm going to do next year. And if I get 600 of them done, I won. Doing an Ironman a couple years ago, I'd only ran a 5K. I was not a healthy guy. But signing up to go do an Ironman 70.3, that was my keystone goal of the year. The reason I say do a keystone goal is that that one goal took care of everything else. Because to do that, I had to work out 4 or 5 days a week. I had to change my eating habits. I was going to listen to way more books on tape because I was going to be running on a bike, you know, and on a treadmill way often. So there were so many things that I was going to change the way I had to wake up earlier to get the stuff done. So that one goal changed so many other goals. So as you're looking at your beginning of the year for next year, what should I do? Try to come up with a keystone goal. One goal that would lead to all those other things.
Love
because
that.
Yeah, it became health, books on tape, eating, all that stuff was just from that one goal. Another productivity, the email is one of the biggest, craziest time sucks in our life. We get so used to, when it first came out, it was like exciting and fun. And so it's almost like a race. Like, let's get my email box to 0. Let's reply back right away. Then they know I'm attentive. They know I care. But as you're trying to grow in your business, it's just not realistic. And people think, oh, I need to reply to that email or I'm going to lose it. And I tell people, no, you don't need to reply right away. Like, everyone has been on a plane for 4 or 5 hours and nothing died.
Yep.
Nothing broke while you were on that plane. So I tell people, set up autoresponders on their email. Only check email twice a day. When you first get into the office, like, you're going to show up and say, hey, here's the 5 things I want to work on today. Don't even open your email or turn on your phone until you've done those 5 things. And then the autoresponder, then you're going to work on your email for like an hour or two. Then the autoresponder is going to say, hey, I'm out doing this today. I'm out in the field. You know, I'm traveling. My wife's sick and I'm babysitting the kids. I'll reply to you tomorrow. Because if you reply to people on those emails, you know, between 7 or 8 or something like that, before everybody else responds, you just reply on all the emails and then you turn on your autoresponder before they have a chance to email you back. You've replied to everybody within a day. And 24-hour response time is great.
Right.
It's amazing. Yeah. You don't need to have these 2-minute response times. So I ended up taking email off of my phone. I recently just turned my phone on Do Not Disturb, where the only people that the phone will actually ring and get through on is if they're on my contact list and they're in my top 40 people, right? Because I'm getting so many sales calls and stuff right now. So other products. So I think that's kind of the same thing. So it's like, don't check your email all day long.
Do Not Disturb.
Yeah, turn off your email notifications, turn off your phone notifications, And so that's super helpful.
Yeah, because that is where you email is only what you responding to other people's requests. So it's you being reactive instead of proactive. So when you take back that control, you set those boundaries. Now you're creating that space for ultimate productivity.
That's the biggest part. I mean, that's exactly what I say in one of my presentations is be you're being reactive instead of proactive. Like, don't let anyone else decide how you should run your day.
Love that.
As soon as you open up your email, you're letting them choose what you're going to do with your time instead. So the and whether it's email, texting, whichever, that's why. And the do not disturb thing, I just started doing that because how many sales calls I'm getting. And that's been amazing to realize, like, the texting and the email, I'm not looking at that as often.
Yeah.
So that would be productivity tip three would be, you know, plan, right? Journal and plan. You and I both have our journals on the table right now.
Rich Life Planner, baby.
Yeah, the Rich Life Planner.
Still available, richlifestore.com.
Dude, I came down to pick up 20 of those today. Everybody on my team gets one of Mattier's Rich Life Planners every year. I send my family members, my teammates at our weekly meetings. I have everybody pull it out, get to break up. Because, you know, right now I'm looking at my goals for the year. And my plan, it's going to be, this is my goal for the year. This becomes my goal for the month. This becomes my goal for the week. And then the other part of that productivity. So if you have everything in your journal, if these are the things I'm going to try to accomplish today, at the end of every night, I relook at it and go, all right, so tomorrow morning, these are the five I'm going to do before I do anything else. I prioritize them. This one's number one. This one's number two. Sometimes I start with the low hanging fruit. There, you could look at that and be like, actually 10 of these I could get done in like 10 minutes if I actually just did them first. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to do these low hanging fruit first. So you keep it in a planner, you keep it organized, and then, you know, the night before I go, these are what I'm going to accomplish tomorrow. I accomplish those before I put anything else. And then I'm constantly, when I'm on phone calls, video calls, I had a few team meetings with my team today, and during that, I'm adding down into my planner into different categories. Okay, no, I'm going to add that. I'm going to add that to the podcast. I'm going to add that to our marketing emails. Oh yeah, that's a great feature. I make sure that I don't just keep it in my brain. I write it down, and then as I'm prioritizing, I keep, you know, going back into it.
I love it, man. Well, he's got definitely a lot more. You guys are going to have to go see him speak live and check out one of his presentations. Aaron, brother, I got so much love and respect for you, man. All of the value that you've added to me personally, to my family, to, you know, just how you've involved us in your journey is, you know, something that's really special to us. And to see the impact that you're having on so many people, grateful that you get the listener to check out my man, Aaron Amuchastegui. And again, we'll have all of the stuff that you guys want to connect with. If you guys want to connect with them, check out their books, check out all the cool stuff that they got going on. Because if you're a real estate investor, he is somebody that you want to follow straight up. And he's somebody that doesn't charge for anything and is just consistently putting out free content and adding value. And then just in regards to having one of the most legendary family dynamics that I've ever been a part of and seen, you guys got to check out Kalina's book, and we'll probably have her on the show. But just grateful to have you here, man.
Thanks so much for letting me come down and just chat today and just having a fun conversation. It's like, yes, our family dynamics are so great. The friendship we have is great. Our kids love each other. It's fun to get to see them hang out and play and everything else. So this was a ton of fun today. But I'm serious. When I tell people to reach out, like I would love to hear your stories, add to them, see if I can provide value in any way.
Well, that wraps up this week's episode. Hopefully you enjoyed that interview and got some massive value from it. Just one thing can completely transform the path that you are on. And if you did, be sure to share it with somebody else. Be sure to give this gift to somebody else that needs to hear this today. And also be sure to tag our guest to let them know what they shared was appreciated, that it impacted you in some way. If you haven't entered our monthly giveaway of over $1,100 in prizes each and every month, we pick one listener. Be sure to head over to go.millionairemindcast.com and check out all the amazing prizes in that contest and giveaway and enter yourself. Also, if you and I haven't connected yet, be sure to text me. You can text me at 844-447-1555. Yes, I answer and respond to every text individually. I personally love connecting with all the listeners of the show. I love hearing what big goals and what big dreams you're marching towards. And most importantly, I love knowing more about how I can support you. So if I haven't gotten to connect with you yet, don't be shy. I want to connect with you. I want to hear what you're up to. Text me at 844-447-1555. Last, be sure to head over to therichlifeacademy.com to check out all the amazing free and paid products that we offer to our Millionaire Mindcast family, from one-on-one coaching with me to courses from our guests, all kinds of free content and downloads, upcoming event info on how you can connect with us live in person at some of our events and workshops, and all kinds of other valuable free tools and resources to help you on your wealth building journey. Be sure to check all those out at therichlifeacademy.com. If you have any questions, just text me at 844-447-1555. But if you're truly serious about taking your life, your business, your wealth to the next level, you're not just looking to keep learning, but you want to start taking action and have accountability and support and a community around you, then getting involved inside our community and getting in proximity to other people just like you is going to be the accelerator you need to get to that next level. It's going to be an absolute must. You can do that over at therichlifeacademy.com. With that being said, until next time, keep investing in yourself and your wealth on your march to 1 million and beyond. Cheers, my friends.